Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the BCE Second Quarter 2018 Results Conference Call. I would like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Thane Fotopoulos. Please go ahead, Mr. Fotopoulos.
Thank you, Donna. With me here this morning are George Cope, BCE's President and CEO, and Glenn LeBlanc, our CFO. As a reminder, our second quarter results package and other disclosure documents, including today's slide presentation, are available on BCE's Investor Relations webpage. An audio replay and transcript of this call will also be made available on our website. However, as usual, before we get started, I want to draw your attention to our Safe Harbor Statement on slide two. Information in this presentation and remarks made by the speakers today will contain statements about expected future events and financial results that are forward-looking and therefore subject to risks and uncertainties. These forward-looking statements represent our expectations as of today and accordingly are subject to change. Results may differ materially. We disclaim any obligation to update forward-looking statements except as required by law. Factors that may affect future results are contained in BCE's filings both with the Canadian Securities Commission and the SEC and are also available on our corporate website. With that, I'll turn it over to George.
Great. Thanks, Dan. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'll just begin with a quick overview and then hand it over to Glenn. First of all, clearly we had an excellent quarter in terms of broadband growth from a year-over-year perspective, 154,000 subscribers being wireless postpaid internet and IPTV, up 44% on a year-over-year basis. And importantly, all three categories had some significant improvement on a year-over-year basis. The 2% EBITDA growth for the company also helped drive a slight margin improvement to the 42%. On the wireless side, you know, we just continue to see strong financials and strong wireless net adds. The net adds of 122,000 postpaid are our highest in 18 years in terms of the growth that we saw. And, of course, even within that, we achieved some reasonably strong EBITDA growth and, again, slight margin improvement, albeit the accounting of the industry has changed year over year, as everyone knows. Wireline, good quarter, EBITDA up 1.1%, driven by some strong residential revenue growth. And again, with tight management of costs, saw our margin increase slightly there. They continue to have a margin that leads from a North American perspective and giving us the headroom for the CapEx program that we have focused on fiber. On the fiber side, the strategy continues to pay dividends for us. External testing from external organizations validating that our product is now the fastest in the market. We added about 47,000 new customers to our FTTH footprint in the quarter. And this morning we announced the next evolution of our fiber product, where later this month we'll have a 1.5 gig service available in Ontario, followed by Quebec, Atlantic Canada, and then Manitoba. A positive about this is any client who has purchased our fiber product over the last couple of years will not require a change in the modem. They'll be able to just naturally go through an upgrade in speed. And this is part of the evolution of this fiber technology, which really is quite remarkable in terms of the speed we'll be able to bring to both business and the home. On track for a free cash flow growth of 3 to 7% for the year. And with this type of RGU growth, should position us well for our dividend growth model into 2019. Turning to wireless, I mentioned the wireless net adds up approximately 38% year over year, driven by strong gross additions in the marketplace. On the prepaid side, continue to see some improvement there. The Lucky Mobile product is doing what we expected it to do strategically. We also, late July, we rolled Lucky Mobile out to the remaining provinces in the country. So we're now in all 10 provinces, and we would expect our prepaid performance to continue to improve on a year-over-year basis. And as I mentioned before, that's important because we really weren't in this space, and it just stops the decline of that revenue in that particular category for us. In the term ABPU, the new, I guess it used to be what we call ARPU, the real metric still for people in terms of our subscribers, we saw 0.6% growth year-over-year. I just want to call out for the analysts that everyone knows we have this large federal contract that we're bringing on board. The contract 6 years is no churn. Excluding the subs in that contract base, our underlying ARPU growth is 1.7 on our traditional business. So it, you know, basically in line, excluding that large account, which has obviously a significantly different ARPU, but a significantly different churn profile. On the network side, we continue to roll out LTE Advanced services. Now at 90%, expect to be at 92% at the end of the year. Turning on the wireline side, FTT expansion and the TV leadership drove 31,000 internet and TV net adds in the quarter, a year over year up 76%. Importantly, on the internet side, we saw approximately 11,000 internet additions in the quarter, a seasonally light quarter with the outs from the universities, et cetera. But on the retail side, 13,000 net additions year over year, as our wholesale adds declined year over year and is not a focus of our business given the revenue profile of the wholesale segment. I mentioned the fiber 47,000 additions in the quarter. That's up actually 45% year over year. So the strategy continues to unfold, as I mentioned, as expected. And we should be at about 4.5 million premises by the end of this year. We had a really strong quarter from a TV perspective. In our wireline core, footprint, we actually saw 7,000 net new TV subscribers. IPTV up 25% year over year. And in our IPTV, of course, is our new product, Alt TV. And also a significant improvement in our satellite business, where our losses improved 33% year over year. And in fact, if we exclude our wholesale satellite relations that we have with one of our telcos in Western Canada, we actually had a 43% improvement in our satellite losses year over year. So again, that the losses on the satellite business continue to slow as a result of the IPTV footprints generally being completed by the telcos across Canada. We also had this, we ran a unique wireless trial in some markets, leveraging our footprint in areas that we've not really been competitive in the rural footprint in the past. Had some very positive results. So we are rolling out now to 30 additional rural communities. The great thing here is the fiber that we're building for our wireless network to these towers, we as a result can offer a fixed wireless solution into the home as well. The speeds customers will see will be 25 to 50. And these would be markets for us that we might have anywhere from 5, maybe 10, 15% market share. And so these rural markets, it's a great solution for us. The test went very well. And so we're going to do 30 additional communities. And you'll hear more about that in additional communities over time, as we think it's a real way for us to get at the rural markets with a fixed wireless solution, leveraging the fiber backhaul that we put in place. It will also obviously help drive 5G in our mobile network going forward. On the media side, you'll continue to have very strong viewership results as CTV, again, continues to be the number one conventional TV network. TSN has returned to being the number one sports network. Our news is leading the country. And overall, you know, we had a very strong result as from the World Cup. We also did made a strategic call to allow TSN and RDS to be available direct, albeit at $25 direct, but a product that is now available also in an over-the-top format. And overall, this business continues to generate significant cash flow for us, but clearly is under some structural challenges for sure in the marketplace. With that, let me turn it over to Glenn.
Well, thanks, George, and good morning to all, and thanks for joining us. I'll begin on slide 9 with a quick overview of our consolidated Q2 financial results. We delivered another solid quarter consistent with plan, led by continued strong wireless operating profitability, an improved organic wireline growth trajectory, and a healthy contribution from Bell Media to overall consolidated free cash flow. This all contributed to total revenue growth of 1.7, which drove a 2% year-over-year increase in adjusted EBITDA. Consistent with this growth in EBITDA, as George mentioned, margin also improved, expanding to 42% on a high revenue flow through, increasing broadband internet scale, improved wireline business markets performance, and disciplined spending on subscriber acquisition and retention, even as the level of competitive intensity remained high throughout the quarter. Adjusted EPS of 86 cents was in line with plan, but down from the 89 cents last year due to the pickup of some operating losses from our minority interest equity investments, which can be variable and lumpy from one quarter to the next. As a result, net earnings were lower year over year despite good growth in adjusted EBITDA, which frankly is the key factor underpinning sustainable free cash flow generation going forward. Consolidated free cash flow of just under $1 billion was in line with plan for the quarter and reflected a timing-related decrease in working capital as well as a seasonal step-up in absolute dollar capital spending characteristic of the busier Q2 summer construction period. So, all in all, very well-balanced operating and financial results once again this quarter. Slide 10 details the results for Bell Wireless, which we are very pleased with overall. Total revenue increased 5%, driven by continued strong subscriber base growth and a greater proportion of postpaid users in the customer mix compared to last year, as well as an increased sales of higher value smartphones. In terms of operating profitability, wireless EBITDA was up a healthy 6.2%, while margin increased 50 basis points to 44.2%, reflecting both a high revenue flow through of 55% and spending discipline on new subscriber acquisitions and upgrades. This was achieved despite a 4% increase in operating costs that reflected higher product cost of goods sold, driven by more customer transactions year over year, as well as an increased network operating expense and customer support costs attributable to the strong postpaid subscriber and data usage growth. As we head into the seasonally busier Q3 back-to-school period, our postpaid momentum remains strong, with growth opportunities from our industry-leading LTE Advanced network, which now covers over 90% of Canadians, a great device lineup, and an expanding Canadian wireless market. Let's turn to slide 11. Looking at Bell Wireline financial results for Q2, you will notice a better organic revenue growth trajectory compared to both the previous quarter and Q2 of last year. Our residential wireline units saw improved performance trends this quarter, with revenue up 1.6% year over year, and combined TV and internet revenue growth of around 4%. In business wireline, the rates of revenue and EBIT decline improved year over year, supported by the cost management actions, as well as stronger IP broadband connectivity and professional service solutions growth that benefited from the contributions of the G7 summit and Ontario election. With increasing broadband subscriber scale, more favorable business market results, and relatively stable year-over-year operating costs, wireline EBITDA was up a very respectable 1.1%. This drove a 20 basis point increase in our North American leading margin to 42.1%, which provides ample operating leverage to fully cover our $2 billion in planned broadband fiber spending in 18. More impressively, I'd like to add that this extensive fiber build-out, which is the largest program of its kind in North America, is being executed at a wireline capital intensity below that of our direct cable company peers. Moving to Bell Media on slide 12, overall performance was consistent with industry trends, reflecting a reduction in spending by advertisers on traditional linear TV and ongoing audience declines as viewership continues to move increasingly to online platforms. Total media revenue is down 0.6% on 1.7% year-over-year decline in advertising. This was moderated by revenue generated from the recently concluded 2018 FIFA World Cup and continued steady growth in outdoor advertising. We also enjoyed relatively stable growth in subscriber revenue, which increased 1.9% this quarter, driven by continued Crave TV and TV Everywhere Go growth, as well as revenue generated from our new TSN Direct and RDS Direct sports streaming services, George alluded to earlier. Lastly, consistent with the expectations of the quarter, adjusted EBITDA decreased 8.5%, mainly the result of higher costs for sports broadcast rights, including the World Cup and Crave TV programming expansion. So despite the structural pressures facing the industry, Bell Media remains well positioned to navigate this changing landscape with its powerful brands, market-leading content, and consistently strong ratings, while generating over $500 million of simple free cash flow annually, which we are redirecting into strategic capital investments that will support the long-term growth of our business and capital markets objectives. EPS, slide 13, provides the key components of the adjusted EPS, which was 86 cents per share for the quarter, as I mentioned, down 3 cents year over year. The higher adjusted EBITDA drove 4 cents of EPS growth, but was effectively offset by higher depreciation and amortization expense, as well as an increased net interest expense. Depreciation and amortization increased 3 cents per share over last year, the result of higher capital asset base, while interest expense was up 1 cent, reflecting the higher average level of outstanding debt. Also negatively affecting adjusted EPS in the quarter, as I mentioned, was the higher year-over-year losses from our minority interest equity investments, principally related to MLSE, which in total amounted to 3 cents per share. Year-to-date, adjusted EPS of 166 is in line with plan, keeping us comfortably on track to achieve our guidance target of 345 to 355 per share for calendar 18. Turn to slide 14 on free cash flow. We generated free cash flow of $994 million in the quarter, driven by adjusted EBITDA growth and lower cash pension payments. This quarter's result also reflected higher planned capital expenditures, as I referenced earlier, and a decrease in cash from working capital due mainly to the timing of payables that will largely reverse out in the back half of the year. With year-to-date free cash flow of more than $1.5 billion on track to deliver full-year growth target of 3 to 7%, we see accelerated free cash flow generation through to the end of the year, giving us significant financial flexibility to support the execution of our strategic capital investment programs within a consolidated capital intensity level of around 17% and higher dividend. To wrap up on slide 15, the financial performance we reported in the first half of 18 demonstrates a clear focus on subscriber profitability and price discipline. We continued strong wireless industry subscriber growth ahead, with continued strong growth ahead, and a wireline business that is competitively well positioned and getting stronger with increasing broadband scale, we see good momentum to take us through to the end of 18 and into next year. Given this outlook, I am reconfirming all of our financial guidance targets for 2018. And with that, I'll turn the call back over to Thane and the operator to begin the Q&A portion.
Thanks, Glenn. So before we start the Q&A portion, just to keep the call as efficient as possible, I would ask the that you limit yourselves to one question, one quick follow-up, so we can get to everybody on the call. If we have additional time, we'll circle back. With that, Donna, we're ready to take our first question.
Thank you. We'll now take questions from the telephone line. If you have a question and you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. To cancel the question, please press the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while participants register. Thank you for your patience. And the first question is from Philip Wang from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Good morning. First, a clarification on wireless. George, thanks for the color on the APU growth, excluding government contract. Just was wondering how Lucky Mobile is doing and if you expect its growth to be a factor in APU growth going forward. And then my question is on the FTTP footprint expansion. You know, you guys seem to be ahead of schedule, having already completed 500,000 of the targeted 800,000 households for the year. Do you think we could, you could do more than 800,000 households this year? Thanks.
So let me do the second one first. No, I don't think we'll be able to get beyond it. Really, two things. One, the capital envelope, but two, also the seasonality. You know, we're really, as you can imagine, when the spring hits into the summer, that we're going pretty hard for our guests out of the U.S. It gets that ground get pretty hard up here later in the year. So we end up not being able to do as much. So I think we're on track. I don't think we'll be, if we're over, it'll be very small, almost immaterial for the street to see it. On the Lucky side, yeah, it's as you can see, the prepaid's improving. With the all the promises now having the product available, you know, it's going to or should turn our prepaid business to not being a drain from a revenue perspective for us, which it has been for many, many years due to a real focus issue for us on postpaid. And over time, of course, as we build the prepaid base up, the strategy there is to do some of that migration to postpaid, which we do think one of our peers has done very well at that and an opportunity for us to do that with the Lucky brand as well. On an overall ARPU base, of course, our mix will change as prepaid would arguably become at least a stable portion of our mix. It wouldn't decline on a quarterly basis, and obviously prepaid subs are a lower ARPU in total. That's helpful.
Right. No, that's very helpful. Quick follow-up on the wireline side. There are still some neighborhoods in Toronto that are yet to be passed for FTTP. You know, just wondering if we should think about how we should think about the way you prioritize, you know, the build through the city. Thanks.
Yeah, so Toronto, I think we're going to end the year, is it 88? I think about 88% of Toronto 416 should be completed by the end of this year. And then the last 10%, it really is about getting right-of-ways approved or one particular condo that might be slow to respond to yes or some of those issues. But, I mean, I think from an investor perspective, you call Toronto completed, fully completed basically at the end of this year with a little bit of add-ons as there's new premises built in the city. The rest are really things we call denials or areas we just can't get at, and those would take 5 to 6 years to sort through. It's the same in every market we go into.
That's helpful. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is from David Barden from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the questions. Appreciate it. Just following up on the Toronto build for the start of the premise, obviously this was the quarter where the mass marketing began. Could you talk about how that might have contributed to the better video / broadband performance in the quarter? And you know, are we at run rate, you think, in terms of where we are in the Toronto market? And if I could just a follow-up on just the media business, in terms of kind of outlook, can we see this flattening out now that we've got the World Cup expenses behind us, or is this kind of a, you know, slow trend downwards and it's more about a playing defense in that business right now? Thanks.
Okay. So on the first question, there's no doubt where we have the fiber footprint. When you see almost a 50% addition to our fiber subs on a year-over-year basis, that's helping drive our broadband growth, but without a doubt helping us drive up IPTV. I mean, for us, you know, a lot of our products are sold that way through a bundle, and particularly now with Alt TV, where it's basically a product with no set-top box, a different price point than traditional TV because we're saving a $300 set-top box. We're passing all that savings over to the consumer and now offering those that would not want a set-top box service with something similar to streaming every conventional or specialty TV capability there in that product. And so you bundle that with the fiber. We think it's a very compelling offer in the 416 core for us. It will be in other markets as well, particularly here we have such a strong growth in the condo development area. So absolutely pulling it through. And then in terms of steady, you know, in terms of broadband, I mean, there's seasonality in broadband always for all of us and our peers. I mean, the second quarter gets impacted by the outs from the schools, and the third quarter is always one of the stronger quarters, and we would expect that historically to continue at what's happened historically going forward. So it shouldn't be a run rate from this quarter. We should, over time, see the seasonality pick up in our broadband numbers. Then on the media business, you know, there are definitely, we have work to do on that. And I think we have our consolidated guidance, which is probably what we're going to stick to in terms of an overall comment to that. But we are doing some pretty creative things with Alt TV, which drives media revenue for all of our and also our peers, because now we're pursuing the non-set-top box marketplace, or, you know, OTT as people would use the term, with an opportunity for our media business then to see growth in subscribers there. You're seeing some of the direct stuff that we've done very carefully with both Crave and with now TSN and RDS. So it's all about adapting that model to that profile to try to turn that business to not be, as you said, in some type of, you know, decline on a perpetual basis. And, you know, that'll be what we'll be working at this year and next year and going forward with that asset.
Thanks, George.
Thank you. The next question is from Simon Flanner from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you. George, you talked about the improvement at the satellite TV business. So is that business sort of right-sized now on the more focused on the more rural? Is that how we should think about this stabilizing more over time? And then just a quick one for Glenn. How should we be thinking about your leverage targets over the next few years with spectrum auctions, et cetera, coming up? Thanks.
Yeah, on the satellite, I would agree with your comment. I mean, there is still some growth in IPTV footprint from us and our peers, but not at the level it was. So clearly, You know, we have our own internal numbers that show us how many satellite customers are still remaining in our IPTV footprint, and it's obviously now down significant, and that's why you're seeing the stabilization. We're not stable yet, but you're seeing an improvement in the losses of satellite, and we would expect, you know, that hopefully to continue. Also, I have to, as I said before, the acquisition a few years ago of Alliant and the acquisition of MTS has helped that business because in those rural markets, we were not as strong at selling our satellite services. We are now under the leadership of those teams. So that's helped it as well. And, of course, Q2 always gets a little bit of help in seasonality because up here, again, the cottage country opens up and satellite business always gets a little bit of a help. But on a year-over-year basis, no doubt there's some structural improvement.
And Simon, thanks for your question on leverage. As you've heard me say many, many times before, we're absolutely committed to the BBB high rating that we currently have and are not going to take on any actions that jeopardize that. Look, we see over the next number of years using our free cash flow to be able to address the current leverage and migrate closer to the stated policy objective. One big thing to remember is the last decade has resulted in over $4 billion of pension injections that we've had to make, and certainly with the healthy state of our Bell Canada pension plan now, I would see that being, you know, not the same type of burden it has been historically. So absolutely committed to the BBB rating, BBB high rating.
Thank you.
Thanks, Simon.
Thank you. The next question is from Aravinda Galapathy from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. In terms of wireline EBITDA growth, you know, we see that you're back to sort of positive growth, even on an organic basis. You know, I suspect the number is something close to 1%, even if you exclude Alarm Force. I wanted to explore, George, the possibility of or the prospect of getting that growth number up to maybe a 1.5 or a 2%. When you think about the sort of the improvements you're talking about in enterprise, potentially better subscriber trends, and, you know, at least from our perspective, it looks like the promotional intensity in the market and the wireline front is a little less than it was maybe a year ago. And then on top of that, the cost reduction. Do you think that that's a realistic prospect as you look beyond 18, or are there just too many headwinds that would kind of get in the way of that?
Yeah, first, thanks for the question. I would not, you know, on the modeling side, the model more than the one right now, and, you know, without giving guidance, but, you know, you are asking me about the 1.5 or 2. You know, there's really the challenge still for us is just the mix. You know, we still have a significant NAS business, although, you know, I do with the analysts and the investors kid, you know, at the beginning of the quarter, you want the revenue at the end of the quarter, you're glad you have less in the mix from a numerator, denominator, math side. But so clearly that's the challenge. Our growth profile of our growth portfolio is strong. And then on the other side, I mean, you know, I think it's clear to say that the great revenue growth we saw off the traditional linear TV, you know, is not at the same level that we would have seen 2 or 3 years ago. And we now have a new competitor in that or new products coming into that space. So our goal here is to be positive on the wireline side because that makes us, you know, the contribution to the company so significant because of our scale. And I think the fiber strategy should enable us to do that with some tight cost management. But I think it's a little too early to talk about things that have a 2 in front of it on the wireline side.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Mayor Yagi. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. George, you mentioned, you know, our pool looks better if you exclude the contracts with the government. But I'm getting about 1% help. You know, you don't provide postpaid ARPU numbers, but the mix shift that I'm calculating is helping you by about 1% in the quarter. So, you know, postpaid ARPU growth is looking to be between 0 and 0.5. Do you suspect that this should trend higher going forward? And what are the pressures that you're seeing on the business itself that is pushing down the growth in that number in the market? And my second question on wireline, can you maybe talk a little bit about your strategy for wireless TTP?
So on the ARPU, I mean, I think the way I would describe it is we said in the last number of calls is, you know, we said we anticipated about a CPI improvement in ARPU on a year-over-year basis. I think it's fair to say the federal government contract doesn't have that type of ARPU in it. So we just for the purpose of the street to give everybody color, we're probably roughly on that number, excluding that contract. That contract's so unique because it's 6 years of no churn. So a very different ARPU profile and subsidy profile than the traditional type of account we would have. So I think that's how I would answer that. And all the mixes of pre and post and all that, you know, that's a modeling thing you and Payne can work on. But from an investor perspective, we thought we would see CPI. I guess I was trying to say underneath that one contract, that's roughly what we're seeing. Clearly, the migration to the higher speed devices and LTE Advanced, a lot of that has happened in the country. So the type of growth we saw the last couple of years on ARPU of 2 and 3%, I think we've been pretty clear on that the last number of calls that, you know, that's not what we anticipate seeing in the marketplace. That's kind of our view there. And sorry, on the other question was about the fixed wireless. Yeah, so the fixed wireless, as I mentioned, we did some trials in some small markets. The cost of this service now looks quite attractive. Part of it is because we're doing fiber backhaul to all of our wireless cell sites, we couldn't really offer this fixed service without that fiber there. So now with the fiber there in these rural markets, we can leverage a fixed product that we did a few trials. And frankly, we saw a pretty significant share in market of the very, very small markets. And so we're just going to roll out in these rural markets where we, quite frankly, don't have an alternative that would be cost-effective, such as even FTTN or FTTH. And so, we've got a small number being done, 30 communities. We'll see how they go. And if that goes positive, we'll do more and more of those communities. And it gives people speeds of 25 to 50, which is way beyond what anyone's offering in those particular very rural communities now. So more to come on that file.
What's the addressable market in terms of size for that technology, in your view?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're still haven't finalized it, but, you know, you're probably, people would be safe to think we have 1.25 million households possibly we could get at with this technology, but that's not what these 30 communities do. But we want to learn from the 30, and as we roll fiber out, because obviously we don't have fiber to every single rural site today, that also lends this opportunity for us from a fixed wireless perspective to offer a product that, quite frankly, is vastly superior than what's available in the market from anyone. And those are markets where we have, you know, high satellite share, obviously traditionally local access share, but very, very low internet share. You know, we, as I said, in some of those markets, we were at 3 and 5%. And so we're just now trying to roll that out in these 30 markets, and then we'll come back to the street with more information as it evolves, but not too much so our competitors don't know everything we're doing.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Sanford Lee from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking the question. On the internet and TV sub strength that you're seeing right now, that's good, but what I noticed is that the wireline data revenue was only up 3%. The Q1 18 data revenue was up 6%. So it sort of seems to suggest that there's ARPU pressure on internet or TV or even possibly both. Now that you've got the Ignite TV product just launching out, can you, and it's early days for that obviously, but can you give me an idea of what you're seeing as far as the pricing environment on internet and TV?
Yeah, actually, I think that I think you've got to look at last year's quarter, not the Q. You've got MTS is in all those numbers for the last four quarters. So that would be, not having it right in front of me, but that would roughly be the 6-3 probably, organic versus not. So that's the first point. On the second, actually, you know, we talked about in one of the notes here, we talked about 9%, 4% revenue growth, between TV and internet, and that would be in those numbers. So, highly competitive marketplace. I wouldn't say, someone had said on one call, less competitive than other quarters. I wouldn't say that. We think it's pretty competitive because our product is clearly, fiber is clearly superior than anything in the market, and Alt TV is obviously a very creative product, meeting the demands of the consumer. And the offset of that, as you just said, is we now got some peers in the marketplace who are offering some new TV services will be competitive. So, highly competitive market. I certainly wouldn't say less competitive. But I haven't seen anything in our actual results that concerns us year over year, which is a little bit where you were going.
Great, and thanks. And if I could ask one quick one on wireless, of the 122 postpaid subs, can you say how many related to the shared services contract
No.
and connected devices?
So,
is there more to come from the government?
Yes, there's actually many more of those customers still sit with our competitor, although I think they say they're not in the subscriber numbers, but they're sitting there not with us. And so this will take a fair amount of time for all these customers to move over. It's a very different type of client. It's a fantastic client to have. It's corporate. It sets us up for wireless solutions that go deeper into the federal government. And the most important part of it is what's for us significant and why the pricing is so different than other clients is that it really has no churn attached to it. But we're not going to give quarter-to-quarter results on any customer profile. I did call out the ARPU in fairness to everyone because I knew we'd get the question for all the analysts on the modeling issue.
Great. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Jeff Sand from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. Just a quick clarification and then a bigger picture question on media and internet. On the clarification, George, just on the Government Canada contract, did you say this was a six-year no churn?
Yeah, it should be six-year. Yeah, basically
okay.
A six-year contract. Actually, it has renewals after that, but you never know if you'd get them.
Okay. Just on the internet-related question, so some of the U.S. operators are now starting to shift their focus to internet-only services, trying to shift away from the bundle. Just given the vast amount of direct-to-consumer video OTT services that have popped up in the U.S., and I'm not saying that Canada has the same number of direct-to-consumer services, but you're now starting to do some of the direct services as well, like TSN. I guess my question is really wondering, in a world like that where the market may be going to internet only, how do you look at that from an ARPU per household or ARPA, however you want to define it, that you could get from the household when there's no traditional television services attached and how that affects the revenue opportunity for the fiber investment?
Okay. So a couple of things. I think, first of all, the underlying strategy of all TV is exactly addressing the consumer's change in how they want to view video. And the product, of course, is currently restricted to two simultaneous streams. So that focus is very, very much on the condominium market, or as we traditionally people use the term cord cutter market or cord never market. That's the subscriber where, frankly, the TV product is. As I said, it's to a customer, the present value savings is about $300, dollars or more over any 24 or 30 month period, because the TV product is anywhere from $10 to $20 cheaper. So you're adding internet plus the video for a much less cost overall, and that's because we're passing that savings through. So we are expecting a lot of bundled alt internet fiber subs going forward. And so you end up arguably with a different or lower overall ARPU, but you're also not providing set-top boxes in your capital program. And so that's really our strategy. And then, of course, we'll continue on the linear TV market, which is still significant for us, providing some growth. And obviously, there are still some additional features on the linear side that we can't fully provide in the OTT world that we don't today. And then on the direct for media, it would make sense. The more important thing for our media assets is to make sure that content and courses content and other content is in a successful alt TV launch, because that's what will drive subscribers to the media business.
So I guess what you're saying is the alt TV contribution is as good as the linear TV contribution?
Net, it should. That would be the goal. Right. Obviously, we absolutely want to get to that type of number. Frankly, early on, it's more cash flow accretive because we're not putting the cash up for the set-top box. And frankly, one of the important things in Canada, the average ARPU for Canadian TV has been around $60 Canadian. That's a lot different than $90 U.S. And obviously, all TVs below that $60, we think that makes some of the OTT linear OTT offers you're seeing in the United States not look any more attractive than what we're now offering in Canada with alt TV. And we think that combined with fiber puts us in a great competitive position.
Okay, thanks, George.
Thank you. The next question is from Drew McReynolds from RBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much. Good morning. George, just want to kind of touch on residential wireline. Clearly the battle over time here moving beyond traditional telecom services to more of the smart home and owning the home. Just can you talk to kind of what the roadmap looks like for Media Room and Media First along those lines? And, you know, to what extent, you know, does your M&A focus shift here as you kind of look more broadly in terms of servicing the home?
Yeah, well, I think on, you know, we made the, as everyone knows, we did the first investment on the security side, really to give us a platform. I think some people here in the market probably would have seen some of our rebranding there. We're starting to offer some of what we call connected home services there, and that's in early days. That product combined with our fiber is really about getting the overall household. In terms of acquisitions, Frank, I think we have our head down now, pretty focused on the organic assets that we have. I mean, there can be, as we've said, there's small things, but nothing of the scale that we've done in the past. If you look at the geography of Canada and what we've been able to put together here, we think we're really happy with the portfolio we have. And I don't mean to be, hopefully that's helped answer the question.
Yeah, no, that's great. And maybe a follow-up for Glenn. Can you just comment what the impact in the quarter was with respect to the G7 and Ontario election and maybe a bigger picture just on the business market? We're clearly seeing a pretty robust U.S. economy overall. Just wondering if that business market, you know, you're a little bit more optimistic in and around it going forward here.
Yeah, look, we've seen, as I said in my remarks, we've seen a turnaround in business in that we're not seeing the same level of decline we've had in the past. And look, you know, I said before, one quarter does not a trend make, but this has been a few in a row, so we are optimistic that we're starting to see some improvement in the economy. It's playing well. Our business market has done a remarkable job of maintaining the market share that we have, and that's despite the pressure on reprice, we're able to manage that reprice better than we have in the past while maintaining the market share. So optimistic that our business performance is going to start to hold. As far as the G7 and the Ontario election, I'm not going to call that out specifics. It obviously Drew, it's not overly material in the big scheme.
Well, they're also confidential contracts.
Yeah.
Okay, understood.
But we'd still be positive regardless.
Yeah, no, understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Vince Valentini from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. One clarification, one question. The fixed wireless service you talked about, George, is that just using your traditional mobile spectrum, or are you contemplating using some of the higher-up spectrum in the 3.5 gig or millimeter wave bands? And then a bigger picture one, still on wireless, would be 5G. I haven't heard you talk much about it. I mean, you obviously have the biggest scale in the business in Canada. You always seem to have a leadership position, as you're doing right now with the biggest fiber build-out. Can you talk a bit about your 5G plans, or do you think of 5G as just being a dumb pipe in the future, or given your scale, can you start to think about being a leader in generating some of these apps for connected cities and whatever other applications? Can you talk us through anything you're doing in the early stages on that? Thanks.
So on the fixed wires we're using, which is the spectrum we have, which is a 3.5 spectrum that we're using for that, and because cell sites have frankly shrunk so much in even these rural markets, it lent itself that with the fiber backhaul to give this an opportunity for us, and that's why we're pursuing it. And so that's, you know, that's probably covered that now a couple different ways, but it's early days. But as we said, it's a way to get to a million plus households with a service that we don't have a strong share on. On 5G, it's interesting. We have done 5G trials. We think we are the best positioned telco maybe in North America, because every cell site we're finished, all this fiber build we're doing is going to serve as an underlay for our 5G mobile network. We don't think in urban markets 5G fixed will be the same as in the United States, because of how deep fiber is going here in Canada between us and our peer in Western Canada, who's following a pretty similar strategy. I mean, in the next 36 months, Canada will probably be the most fiber-connected country in the world. And so the 5G fixed opportunity at 1 gig isn't comparable to today's launch of 1.5 already into the home with fiber. On the mobile side, obviously, absolutely the next evolution of service for us will be 5G. That will be as the handsets and the protocols are set in a way that they're commercially readily available, and then we'll do an overlay of our network with that. And then on the whole area you're going to, which is the whole IoT area, yeah, we think it's a huge opportunity for us with our vertically integrated wireline and wireless business, and that'll be in our numbers going forward, and we'll have more to say as that technology evolves. But we think we've just set our assets up perfectly for that because we think this fiber investment we're making in wireline, in one sense, is going to make our wireless business, which would have had to bear the burden of this, really now it'll just be obviously a cross-charge from one entity to another.
That's good, George. Just one little, I mean, but would you already have in your numbers some investment in not just the network, we see what you're doing with fiber and your cell sites, but, you know, actually on the software and application side to think about some of those future IoT applications? Is that just wait and see for standards, or do you already invest in that today?
We're already investing today. It's, you know, I won't go much further because there's a lot going on in the company in that space, starting to see actually some early wins. They're not 5G wins, but they're IoT wins. And I'm probably just not going to go further than that, other than we talk a little bit about some smart city work we're doing, et cetera, in the marketplace. So, yeah, very, very excited about the opportunity. A lot of strategic work going on in the company, all of which, at this point, the only one really interested in this is my competitor, so I'm not going any further.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Batya Levy from UBS. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. One on wireless first. You mentioned that the strong momentum continued after the quarter. Can you provide more color if most of those growth ads are coming on the phone side or tablets and connected devices are helping as well? And churn remains very low. Can we see any improvement in that, or this is kind of like a good level to attain? And maybe a little bit more strategically on the media business, how do you think about that longer term, given that there are some regulatory restrictions to add more scale? Do you think that you need more scale to perform better in that business? Thank you.
Okay, so on the mix, it's a significant amount, vast majority, almost all of the significant postpaid smartphone additions. That would be driving a lot of that volume. The second question, sorry, was it? Yeah, no, the second question?
Churn improvement.
Oh, yeah, so on the churn side, frankly, we'd still like to do better. We're working hard every single quarter to try to see those numbers improve. Having said that, as you said, I mean, at 1-1, we're pleased, but we want to just keep obviously trying to drive that churn down with our retention programs. About, you know, Canada has a structure that's lent itself to these type of churn numbers. There are some U.S. carriers doing better than us on that space. We pay attention to it, and we want to work to get to those type of numbers over time. And on the media side, yeah, we were disappointed in the investment we were looking to make in Quebec to strengthen our position there. But overall, we're actually quite, we think our media asset investments give us the portfolio we need to execute there. Of course, also the ownership of our sports teams has been nothing but a tremendous investment for us. You know, our vertically integrated P&L on the sports side is pretty positive because we own the sports teams. We own the number one sports broadcaster in both French and English. And, of course, we're now offering that product as customers want it on even a direct basis. So we think we're well invested on the media side, and there's nothing significant there that we need to do other than now try to monetize that asset as the market changes with products like Alt TV and Crave in the marketplace.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Richard Cho from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. Wanted to ask, how should we think about wireline margins as you finish the Toronto build and then longer term as the fiber build ramps down? Where could we see margins go from this 42% level that been very consistently posting?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Richard. We probably wouldn't change where we are now. I don't want to give guidance on margins, but you know, the challenge obviously on the margin side for us is the local access line decline. We still have a base there, and everyone on the line, the analysts and the investors, would know the margins on those historically. The offset is when you're putting broadband in, the margins are very high there too, but of course the CapEx is significant. So you know, to do much better when we look at the global wireline margins is almost hard for us to forecast. Obviously, we work to try to improve it. On the cost side, though, I think it is fair to say as you're now indicating, we roll out the fiber, we will ultimately see savings because the truck roll costs will drop simply because fiber requires less repair work than the traditional technologies that we leverage. But, I'm not probably prepared to say, the margins are going to get even better. I think we saw a little increase this year. Also, the synergies of the MTS deal and what we did with Bell Line have clearly helped us overall to hold these margins as we've seen the local access decline.
And as a quick follow-up, in terms of the OPEX, in terms of the build-up costs, that will eventually go away, but it's going to probably take some time. But when it does,
a lot of the costs right now are in the capital costs, right? So much of this is the capital to connect the home. There's no doubt on even on the modems, like those type of devices, right? A lot of that's caught in our capital, not as much in the OPEX. But there is clearly, we've talked before, we're hoping over time, to see a 5% operating cost savings versus our traditional broadband to fiber. But we need to continue to get the scale that we're now getting to really see that benefit. But there's no doubt where we have fiber, there are less truck rolls, which is going to ultimately save us money. Frankly, the work becomes in the home, not out of the home now, because some homes just don't have the capability for this type of speed based on what the wiring they may have in the house.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I'd like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. Fotopoulos.
Thank you, Donna. So before we sign off, I just want to thank everybody for their participation and interest in BC this morning. I'll be available throughout the day for any follow-up questions and clarifications. So with that, thanks all. Have a great day.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.